Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Today on the show, are kids really in crisis, or are we getting the story all wrong? Our guest is science journalist Melinda Wenner-Moyer, author of two books, including How to Raise Kids Who Aren't A-Holes, but it's the other word, and Hello, Cruel World. Melinda has written an article in Scientific American's April issue entitled The Kids Are All Right.
Drawing on the latest research, she takes a closer look at what's actually happening with today's kids and why the picture may be far more nuanced and even hopeful than many headlines suggest. We'll talk about resilience, risk, and what adults often misunderstand about growing up in today's world. Melinda Moyer, welcome back to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to talk about this. I think a lot of parents who, throughout the time they're raising their kids, if their kids seem to be really happy and doing well, they're thinking, wait, am I missing something here? Because the headlines have it all, that it's all bad. Is it just that, as you say in the article, that bad news is more popular than good news?
Well, that is certainly part of it. And we also know that all generations of adults, you know, for many decades have had this kind of, oh, kids these days opinion about kids. It's a really kind of universal and timeless phenomenon. But certainly the media is not helping, and sort of clickbait, you know, types of stories where we know that the bad news, the scary, the alarmist headlines are really what get clicks. And so I think I'm a journalist too, a lot of media outlets are really looking for these kind of alarming stories to get people, you know, to read them. I've been covering trends in parenting and child development for nearly 15 years now. And certainly I've seen this kind of narrative, this like, oh my gosh, we should be so worried about kids narrative. But, you know, I talked to researchers as a science journalist, and it was really interesting to notice that what parents and other adults say about kids, that's not what I hear from researchers when I talk to them about the same issues. And it's really, really interesting.
Well, you list a handful of areas in which kids today are better, faster, stronger, you know, just more empathetic, more accepting, more inclusive, also more resilient than they've been given credit for. And it makes me think about helicopter parenting. I think that's where helicopter parenting and all those other types of parenting that kind of, you know, sprang from that. That made kids not resilient and not able to function on their own. So could you address that particular aspect of children?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, there's so much concern about kids' mental health right now for good reason. The data there are worrying, and I do talk a little bit about that in the piece. But this concern about kids' mental health has kind of been counterproductive in some ways, because it has led to parents really thinking, oh, my kids should not have bad feelings ever. You know, if they're feeling frustrated or sad, then they're probably more likely to become, you know, anxious or depressed. And so I want to protect my kids from challenging experiences. I want to protect my kids from challenging feelings. And this has led to a lot of helicopter parenting, as you said, snowplow parenting is another one, where parents are really kind of hovering over their kids, jumping in and fixing problems for them, doing their homework for them so that they don't feel frustrated. You know, I think another part of this is we really want our kids to succeed, and we're feeling stressed about college admissions. And so we're, you know, jumping in and helping our kids always succeed instead of ever experience failure. And what we know about this kind of helicopter parenting is that, well, first of all, it's actually associated with less good mental health in kids and young adults. It actually does make kids more anxious and depressed, you know, which is the opposite of what we want. And it means kids aren't having these kinds of experiences that are so formative for building resilience. You know, kids need to recognize that they can feel frustrated, they can feel sad, and yet they can get through it. And, you know, having these difficult experiences also gives kids the practice in developing emotional coping skills. And really, these kinds of coping skills are developed over time through the practice, through having these difficult feelings. And when we take those opportunities away, we're taking away opportunities for kids to build resilience.
Sure. It seems like there is a lot of studies, there's a lot of stuff going on where people are talking about allowing kids to have more autonomy and have a little bit more agency over their experience in life. And yet, as a parent, it's tough sometimes. You don't know where to draw that line. How much should I protect my kid? How much should I advocate for them? Or how much should I encourage them to advocate for themselves? What kind of guidance do you have for a parent who is, what have you seen in the studies that suggest, how do you find that balance?
Yeah, it's a great question because there is no sort of one right answer to what the balance is. It really does depend on the child, I mean, on yourself too, and what you're comfortable with. But, you know, kids with different personalities, different temperaments, they're going to have, you know, different sort of levels of tolerance for different things. So, you know, I think if you have a child who is kind of anxious and you're worried about how much you can expose them to, then it's smart to start small. You know, if there's a mistake they make, don't immediately try to fix it. If they, you know, one common thing is they leave their Chromebook or their soccer shoes at home when they need them for practice. And, you know, a parent might think, I have to drive it in and fix my, you know, and solve this problem for my kid. And that's something we didn't used to do, right? And so you can think about, well, okay, what if I don't fix this problem for my child? And yes, it's going to be hard in the moment. They're going to feel like, oh, my teacher's going to yell at me or something. But they will get through that. You know, they're not going to not survive that. And when they get through it and they realize, well, the world hasn't ended, then they realize, oh, maybe I can handle these types of things. So you can really start small. And when your child does get through it, you know, even if they have difficult feelings, once they get to the other side of it, you can say things like, you know, that was really brave of you. I'm really proud of you because I know that wasn't easy. And once you slowly sort of build these little steps of, like, you know, not jumping in and fixing everything for your kid, then they start to recognize that they have some more, you know, resilience than they thought. And you can build and do more and more and more. And so it really does depend on the kid. But I do think, you know, if you're not sure, just start with the little stuff and slowly increase it and watch your child and see, you know, how difficult is this for them? If they're really overwhelmed, if it's really affecting their ability to function because you're giving them so much to do, then, you know, ease back a little bit, help them a little more until they get to that point where they can really do it themselves.
That makes a lot of sense. I was laughing at the title of your article is The Kids Are All Right, which of course was a song by The Who. And there are lots of different references in culture. There was a movie called that. And then I was thinking about Kids, What's the Matter with Kids Today from Bye Bye Birdie. That's 1960. So these questions and concerns have been going on throughout millennia. What is it, do you think, that makes every generation feel that the next generation is going to hell in a handbasket?
Yeah, that's another great question. And that was one of the really interesting questions I wanted to investigate when I was writing this piece. Like, why do we always feel like this? And I think, you know, researchers said there's a couple of things going on. I mean, first of all, there is in every generation a new technology that seems terrifying to adults, you know, and it's been way back, like the printing press freaked people out, and novels, there was so much controversy over novels, televisions, radio. There's always something that adults think, well, this is going to ruin the next generation. And, you know, right now we have a lot of that with social media, phones, AI. Like, there's, you know, and I'm not saying there's not good reason to be concerned, but I will say this is a universal phenomenon. There's also some really interesting research on how adults think of kids today versus kids of the past. So there's a researcher who conducted a study in 2019, and they found that, so first of all, intelligent adults think that kids today are less smart than they used to be. Well-read adults think that kids enjoy reading today less than they used to. And we know both of those things aren't true. But they found that these misperceptions are driven by people's tendency to notice other people's limitations in areas where they excel. And they also, people have a memory bias that causes them to assume that kids in the past actually excelled in these areas just like they did. So an intelligent person will think, oh, 30 years ago, everybody was super smart, or everybody, you know, all the kids loved to read, which isn't actually true. That's a misperception based on their own experiences loving to read or being really smart. And then they look at kids today and they're like, oh, that's, you know, there's a mismatch here. So it must be that kids today are just not as good at these things as they used to be, or not as interested in these things. So it's really interesting. It is misperception and a memory bias that is, you know, contributing to these beliefs as well.
That explains so much. It really does. And then also just being away from, I mean, if you've never had kids, then you're probably less likely to talk about, you know, kids 30 years ago and kids today. But I notice the further I get away from, you know, having adolescents at home, the less sort of tolerant I am. When they come in, you know, to the Starbucks and I'm sitting there doing some work and suddenly it's 11:30 and I know it's their lunch hour and they come in, I'm so much less tolerant than I was when my kids were in high school doing the very same thing. So there's there's that as well. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Live, we're having a conversation with science journalist Melinda Winner Moyer. She's the author of an article in the April issue of Scientific American titled The Kids Are All Right. And she's also the author of several books, including the more recent Hello, Cruel World. And that book was released last year. Is that right, Melinda?
Yes. Yes. Almost a year ago. That's right.
Okay. And that's kind of about how to raise terrific kids in this, you know, terrifying world. And you've gotten a lot of great critical acclaim for that book. So I'd love to switch to that book for just a moment. You know, if you can just give an overview of what you've offered there.
Absolutely. So the book really stemmed from my own anxiety as a parent. I have a 14-year-old son and an 11-year-old daughter, as well as the anxiety I was sensing from parents around me about, you know, how do we raise good and resilient kids in this world that feels really complex, that's rapidly changing, where there's technologies we don't really understand. You know, what I wanted to get down to were, what are the key skills that we can teach kids today to help them manage this very difficult, seemingly difficult world anyway? What is, you know, I wanted to dig into the science. What do we know about how these skills develop? What can we do as parents and educators to help them develop? And why are they really important? So each chapter of my book is focused on a different skill or issue. And it really drills down into, you know, what we can do, whether it's, you know, empathy, building empathy and resilience, and helping kids avoid addiction. I also talk about technology and social media. How do we build media literacy? How do we build financial literacy? So each chapter tackles a different issue and really why it's so important to foster those skills and what we can do to help kids develop them.
That sounds wonderful. I find it interesting, and you were talking at the beginning of the interview about having looked at these parenting trends over the 15 years you've been a science journalist. It's so interesting that you're a science journalist, but you treat these topics related to parenting and children. I mean, everything from the upsides and downsides of fluoride for your children to things like this, looking at their emotional resilience. Are you just a lot calmer about things? Just saying, you know, if you look at the science and all this research, you know, as you say, the kids are just, they're going to be all right.
Yeah, I do feel, because so many of my conversations are with researchers, and researchers really have much calmer views about kids than the media does, than other parents do. I mean, I'm talking with researchers all the time, and they're like, oh no, it's, you know, a lot of these concerns are overblown. This is not what we're seeing in the research. So that certainly eases my anxiety. And also just writing my book, Hello Cruel World, and realizing, wow, we have agency. There are things we can do as parents to make our kids, you know, more empathetic, more resilient. Like, there are very clear strategies we can use, and they're not all that complicated. That, you know, that feeling of, okay, it's not hopeless and it's not out of my control. There are things I can do as a parent to help my child thrive. Like, that really also calmed me down. So yes, absolutely. And this is one of the reasons I love my job is that, you know, it's hard to be a parent right now, but a lot of what I learn in my work just makes me feel much better.
You mentioned in the article, and there's a very spiffy little graph talking about empathy and how much of a part of the way we are looking at this generation revolves around empathy.
So yes, there's some really interesting research and a really interesting story about how empathy has changed and what we've learned. You know, a lot of what I hear about kids today is, oh, they're less empathetic, they're, you know, less compassionate, and they're more narcissistic, they're more selfish. And so there's a researcher that I interviewed, Sarah Conrath. She's a social psychologist at Indiana University, Indianapolis. And she, back in 2011, published a study where she analyzed changes in empathy as determined from tests given to college students over the course of from 1979 to 2009. And in that period, she found empathy had actually sharply declined among youth. And that paper was published, and there was lots of articles about it saying, oh, you know, empathy has declined and kids are terrible. Then in 2025, she decided to run the same study, but for college students through 2018. And what she found was that 2007 was actually the lowest point for empathy in kids, and that since then, empathy has grown, and now it's higher than it has been at any point over the last 39 years. So she published that study, and she was like, oh, there's going to be so much media coverage. This is such great news. And what she found was that this particular study got almost no media coverage. And yeah, it's exactly what we were talking about at the beginning, where the media just loves these alarmist, scary stories. And for good reason, they get more clicks. And the good news just kind of goes under the radar. And she was really, really surprised by this. And she also has conducted studies on narcissism that basically say the opposite, that kids today are less narcissistic than they used to be. And again, not as much media coverage of that.
No. They want to sell those papers, get those clicks. Was Conrad able to identify the factors that she thought those changes and the good news was attributed to?
So she hasn't really looked at that, but I did ask most of the researchers I talked to, you know, what could be going on here? What might be the mechanism? And a lot of them mentioned changes, well, two big things, changes in education and what is emphasized in schools. And the other thing is parenting and how it's changed. So for a long time, maybe the past 20 years, researchers have come to understand that soft skills like social skills, you know, emotional development are just as important for kids' success as hard skills, academic skills. And so they've really been emphasizing the importance for schools to, you know, develop these kinds of soft skills. And now most schools have social and emotional learning curricula to help develop these kinds of emotional skills, including empathy. And so that might be a big driver. The other thing is parenting styles have shifted, and, you know, parenting trends have shifted. So there's less punishment, less spanking than there used to be. And there's a lot more conversations about feelings, which we know. And one of the things I talk about in my books is the more that parents talk about and name feelings and normalize both good and bad feelings with their kids, the better able kids are to develop empathy. Because when you understand a feeling, feeling that you're having in yourself, it's easier for you to understand other people's feelings and to know what to do to make somebody feel better and to be compassionate. So I think this is also a really big shift that's happened where parents are having these conversations. They're talking about their own feelings as well. And kids are growing up, you know, much more emotionally literate and able to be compassionate.
Yes. Well, I'm wondering then if there was this sort of crescendo of lack of empathy a lot, you know, quite a few years ago now. What would be your theory about why we still have all this bullying going on? Or is that something that is dropping off too, especially when it comes to cyberbullying?
Well, we do. I mean, obviously, cyberbullying and bullying are still big problems, but we do know that bullying rates have gone down and that violent crimes have dropped among adolescents as well. So again, this is one of those things where I think the narrative that we hear that, oh, bullying has gotten so, so much worse is not actually accurate. And again, I'm not saying it's not a problem. I mean, I see it in my kids' schools. But we do see that the trends are going down. And I think that's something that we should celebrate and consider as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I always love to talk about the marshmallow test. I don't know why, but you do mention it kind of at length in your article. It was from 1970, and it was about kind of self-control and delayed gratification skills. And even this sort of thing, we say that kids have shorter attention spans, but this recent test shows that that's not true. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is so interesting. And I found it surprising because, again, I think this narrative is, oh, kids are on their phones all the time. There's all this, you know, immediate gratification. And so therefore, kids are, you know, have less patience and less, you know, less ability to have delayed gratification. But yeah, what we're finding is the opposite. So that marshmallow test, and by the way, they did actually use various kinds of treats, not just marshmallows, but it's still like referred to as the marshmallow test. So, you know, you might have been given something if you were in the marshmallow test that would have been much more appealing to you. In that test, you sort of summarized it, but kids are offered the option of eating one treat immediately, or, you know, they've got a treat in front of them and they say, okay, you can eat this right now, or you can wait some amount of time to get two treats. And they tested to see, you know, did the kids immediately eat the one treat because they couldn't be patient, or, you know, how long could they wait for a second treat? And they tried different lengths of time. And we know that the longer kids wait, has been linked with, not totally consistently, but a lot of positive outcomes like wealth and health and less substance use. And so researchers decided to look at, well, how long can kids wait now versus back then? And there have been so many different iterations of the marshmallow test that have been done since 1970. And what they have found is that over the past 50 years, kids wait, and kids today wait a lot longer for that second marshmallow than they did in the past. So the time back in 1970, kids could wait about 3 minutes, whereas now, I think the most recent data were from 2018, 8 minutes. So that's a very big increase. And it really runs counter to what we think about kids' impulsivity today and their ability to be patient. It's really interesting.
That's very encouraging. Well, we're coming to the end of our segment, but I wondered what you personally found most encouraging about the studies and results that you looked at.
You know, I think one thing that we didn't touch on a whole lot is that kids are more inclusive. There seems to be less bias among kids today against, you know, differences in gender identity and sexuality and in racial differences and ethnic differences. And this, to me, is really heartening and really important. And I think part of it is parents are really doing a great job of normalizing these things, talking about racism, talking about sexuality, and just kids are being exposed to so many more things in the world, and it's just considered much more normal. So for me, you know, I'm really happy to see that because it seems like a very, very important shift. And, you know, I just hope it continues.
That's so nice to hear. I feel like my kids have educated me on those things.
And for sure.
Now, when I ask them, you know, to help me define one of these new terms, they roll their eyes and say, you know, just get past it. It's just not a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so amazing and wonderful to see. Like, these do not have to be big issues. And I love that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this has been so great speaking with you. It makes me feel hope, and it makes me feel happy. And it's a great way to start the day. So Melinda Wenner-Moyer is our guest. She's a science journalist, and the article in the April issue of Scientific American that she has written is called The Kids Are All Right. But look up all of her other articles between, like, the New York Times, Scientific American. You have written so many on so many interesting topics. You do have a great job. And check out her book, Hello, Cruel World. Melinda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.